I have one question for you.
What?
What do you think of my wife's brownies?
They're amazingly amazing.
You're lucky, you know.
I know.
I'm luckier.
Welcome to The Writer and the Critic, a monthly podcast devoted mostly to speculative fiction books, reviews, and the odd bit of idle gossip. I'm your host, Kirsten McDermott, and sitting across the table from me is your co-host, Ian Mond.
Hello, Kirsten.
Hello, Ian.
It's just the two of us.
It's just the two of us. We have no guests.
No guests, nothing. I know.
It's a bit scary.
It's a bit lonely, actually.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, you used to be good company, but now.
Oh. Yeah. 10 podcasts in.
Yeah, I know. What's can you believe that? 10. We're now into the next digity bit. It's not single digits anymore.
Double
now,
digits.
That's the word.
double digits.
Yeah, we're a double digit podcast. People said we'd never last beyond the first half hour of the first episode. Hard to them.
Who said that?
I did.
Okay. Okay. So, what are we doing this month? This was your idea.
Yeah, well, I thought we should do a Hugo special. It was helped the fact that we had read two of the books.
Two of the books.
And we weren't going to read a third book. So really it just became a normal episode. Just happens to be just with the word Hugo on it, because we only had to read two books. But yeah, I thought why not? I mean, the Hugos are awarded, well, we're recording this in Australia on the 18th of August 2011.
Yes.
In America, whether Hugo's are being awarded, it's probably still the 17th or is it the 18th? I get confused with time. It's 13 hours, 14 hours difference in Reno.
It's still morning. The 18th, but in the morning.
Yes, it's very early morning in Reno. The morning of the first day of the convention.
Yes.
Correct. The Hugos are announced on
the 20th of August, the evening of the 20th US time.
So the 21st, so in 3 days out, about 3 days.
Yeah.
Okay, not exactly 72 hours. And I don't know what my point was.
Except, I don't know what your point was.
Except to say that, you know, this is the Hugo episode, 15 minutes before the Hugo starts. So why not?
Well, it's going to date very quickly.
No, it won't.
We're not going to make any predictions.
No,
anyway.
It won't, because at right this point, and the winner is... And then we'll add in,
I could go back and do
yes, it. You see? So I'll do that again. Just
you know
wait.
What?
And the winner is, see?
No, actually what we should do
what?
Is not tell them we did that and put it in anyway and just predict the winner.
Yeah, but what'll happen is we, the and winner. The winner is,
Connie Willis.
You know, it'll be like a stupid voice. I'm just, you know, it'll be a stupid voice and people will know it'll be different. Anywho.
I need you to get back and do that voice.
Connie Willis.
Anyway, to recap, for those playing at home, we reviewed Feed by Myra Grant.
Yes.
In episode 2, way back in episode 2.
I liked it. You detested
it. I did not like it.
You wanted to throw it across the room.
I did.
Yes. So not a Hugo winner for you.
No. And we also reviewed the double book Blackout All Clear by Connie Willis in episode 7, which we'll get to in a minute. So they're the two that we've previously reviewed. And so if you want to go back and hear what we said about them, why haven't you heard already?
Yeah, exactly.
You should be watching. I can't believe you people. You're coming in episode 10. You don't go and get the back catalogue.
I know.
What are we going to do? Anyway.
It's so rude of them.
So we've done those already.
Yes.
Funnily enough, we actually got an email from Kat Sparks quite a while ago that we've been saying every episode since, we have feedback from Kat that we didn't get time to go through. We'll do that next month. Kat, we're doing it now.
Yeah. Should be a round of applause from you.
Thank you for your feedback, Kat. I am going to read out about half the email because it's a very long email from Ms. Sparks. About what she had to say to us about what we thought about Blackout and All Clear. You both say you enjoyed reading the books a lot, then go on to nitpick over ways they could have been made considerably shorter. One of you queries why such an extraordinary level of intricacy, suspense, historical detail, etc. within the prose is necessary. Kirsten says that the more time that passes since finishing the book, the more she wonders what all the fuss was about. Dudes, fiction is supposed to be all about the reader and the reading experience, isn't it? A magic kingdom the reader steps into, then steps out of again. What happens after you finish a book is all well and lovely, but surely the reading experience itself is the most valid part of the process. I'd suggest that if you loved the books while reading them, they were good books. Had they been half as long, less suspenseful, containing mobile phones, featuring three emotionally stable time travellers with complicated lives back home and sons, troublesome urchins, they would have been different. Maybe you would have enjoyed them more, but I'll bet you wouldn't have. My 80-year-old mother reads no SF at all. She was an evacuated English child herself, and I wondered how the historical detail would hold up to someone who actually lived through parts of the experience. I gave her both books and she adored them, her comment being, I didn't want them to ever end. That comment reminded me of the way I felt when I finished reading Willis's passage. Utter disappointment that my morning commute would no longer contain people I had grown so fond of. So,
you've got a beautiful reading voice. Really, I mean, you read that.
Shut up.
I mean, seriously, lovely.
Anyway.
Yes.
So that's what Kat had to say, which... Yeah.
Well, can I jump in?
Okay, sure.
Why would you have critics if you took that line?
The reading is, you just have the reading experience, yes. And then that's it.
Why would you have reviews of anything? Because it means you
never... Well, to let you know what you might want to be reading.
Yeah, but it's, there's a lack of self-reflexivity there.
Yeah, I emailed Kat back actually, and one of the things because I found it really interesting. It's a very valid point to say, you know, if you really love the book while you're reading it, then isn't that the most important thing? But I think there's a difference between your primary reading experience, which is what you have between the covers while you're reading the book, often without a lot of thinking behind the scenes and so yep. on, which was definitely the case with the Connie Willis because she just dragged you along. But then there's also a retrospective reading experience when you're thinking about the book. And I don't think actually one is more valid than the other. And with some books, the retrospective experience can dampen the book. But that doesn't actually mean that the experience you had while you're reading it wasn't valid and legitimate and still there.
If I'd hated it, I wouldn't have finished it. I was annoyed by aspects of the book, but as you said, the narrative drags you along. And yeah, I did enjoy it, but I mean, to not then... But then, a few days later, and it wasn't a conscious thing for me, and neither probably was for you.
No, it kind of crept in.
Yeah, that just things popped up. And I remember us talking about it, how we both said, you know, I really enjoyed it at the time, but
now I think about it,
and the good critic/reviewer allows the book to seep in because you need that sort of post reaction.
And I mean, one of the things that I, because the book was very detailed. And it did kind of make me want to go and look a bit more around about that period of history.
I did too, which is a good thing for the book to do.
But then you find out there's actually quite a lot of historical inaccuracies and some real clangers, and that's not a good thing. And I think it's quite fair to have a retrospective opinion of the book, which may be in almost diametric opposite to what you felt while you're reading it, to your primary reading experience, and that doesn't mean necessarily that you wish you hadn't read the book or that you didn't enjoy it or that you thought it was a waste of time.
I don't feel dirty after reading it. No. it was entertaining. It's 1,000 pages long. It's entertaining. Yeah. I mean, she is, in terms of writing a sentence and writing a story and baiting and switching and all the things that she does, all the little tricks that she does it extremely well, because even though each chapter basically ends off and, oh, my God, what's going to happen?
Turn the page.
Yeah, that's the thing. She does that fantastic. there's no doubting Connie Willis's ability as a storyteller. No doubting at all. But you cut that out, the tricks of the trade, which are all very important, and you find that there's something wanting. And, I mean... We were very nice. There have been reviews out there recently that have been more vicious than us.
Not that justifies what we did. Well, apparently Connie, which I hadn't actually heard before, but Connie Willis attracts some pretty savage criticism, which seems strange.
Well, it might be.
Like personally, she not her books, but.
Well, it's a tall poppy syndrome thing, potentially.
Very weird.
No, it's potentially wrong. It's potentially a tall poppy syndrome thing. I mean, she's won Hugo's. She's noted. She's a popular female science fiction writer, which there aren't that many. Mm. So easy to point fingers at and say, well, it's Connie again. I mean, she does a lot of Toastmastering. She's a face that's out there.
Yeah,
so she's easy to point fingers and go, oh, God, Connie Willis. And she's an American who obviously has a fascination with the UK, which pisses off a lot of English people.
I did wonder if that had something to do with it. that she's writing outside of her own.
I keep coming back to this issue. The otherness issue is not just about a white person writing about African culture. It's also about Western culture writing about Western culture.
Yeah.
Because we're all bloody different. Not just different, bloody different. and you look at the UK reviewers of this book, and they have absolutely and utterly savaged it. And the thing is, and what's going to happen, it's going to win the Hugo.
Oh, that's your prediction.
I'm dead set it's going to win it. And I'm happy for me to say in episode 11, I was wrong. But I'll tell you who I think should win, but we'll get to that later.
Yep.
But I think it'll win, and when it does, there is going to be a flame war on. You can guarantee it. You'll get the people who hated it, and you know it won't be us, but there'll be others who'll just get on, and they will give her a good spanking, and she won't deserve it. There'll be that. Oh, I know what'll happen.
That's kind of sad. I think that's sad when it comes off the page, as it were, and you start making personal remarks about authors, not for anything that they've actually said or behaviour they've
check the Twitter feed. And, yeah. If she doesn't win, I think actually Twitter-wise, depends who wins, but of the other nominees, except possibly for Bujold, who's also won a number of Hugos, and I think people would say, what, Cryburn, really? The 14th book in a series, that one? You might get that sort of comment. But if it's Willis, I'd be surprised if the Twitter feed wasn't
that's
huge
very
behind
sad.
That. Look, it may not even be an attack on...
I think I might avoid the Twitter feed.
Yeah, it may not be an attack specifically on Connie, but an attack on Hugo voters for allowing that book to win. I mean, I'll be honest.
Terrible.
I'll be honest. I voted, and I won't say yet. Well, we'll later who I put first, but I did put no award in front of Blackout All Clear.
Oh,
I've never done that before. Partly because I've only really voted for the Hugos a few times, but mostly because I really didn't like it. And the more I think about the book, the more I didn't like it. Doesn't mean I like Connie Willis.
Yeah, it's funny actually because the analogy that I made just off the top of my head when I replied to Kat all those centuries ago.
Who's never going to listen to this podcast again now that I've told her that I put no award ahead of Blackout and All Clear. But anyway, yeah.
There's going to be a horse head in your bed.
I know. Cat can be a bit scary.
But no, the analogy I made, it's like being in a relationship with someone and the relationship ends and you might find out things about that person afterwards and, maybe they weren't the person you thought they were, but that doesn't mean necessarily, unless it was a really awful relationship, that you wish you hadn't been involved with them or that you didn't enjoy the relationship while you were in it. You can have two different experiences, which don't necessarily have to invalidate each other.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I think at the time I was beginning to grind my teeth after page 700, and they refused to tell each other what was going on just to push it along. But the thing is, I mean, look, Tansy's another person who loves it, those two books, and she's been supporting, and she's also noted some of the outcry about it. But and she keeps coming back to the idea. Well, you can't, in a sense, while it is a self-contained story. You do have to sort of – it is part of the Connie Willis time-travelling feel from the previous books. And you need that to sort of set the tone. And I get that. That's possibly correct.
Yeah.
I have read To Say Nothing of the Dog, which I remember finding to be quite a nice little twee book at the time. I enjoyed it a lot. I actually did quite enjoy it.
Quite a nice little twee book.
It was very twee. It's twee. She's a bit of a twee. Don't you think she's a bit twee? Is that right? I don't know what the word means exactly, but –
No, I don't. Well, I think she can be, but I mean, she can be a lot of things. Connie Willis has, and I should have looked this up before the podcast, but she wrote, I don't know where it was originally published, but it was collected in The Winds of Marble Arch, which was a Subterranean Press sort of best of Connie Willis, huge, massive doorstopper of a book. That's where I read quite a few of her short stories, and she wrote this one that I cannot remember, but it was the most disturbing, vile, beautifully horrible story I've ever read. It's
so
just one of these
stroke.
Ones that has clung to me. It's horrible, and I'll look that up and put it in the show notes. I think she's a versatile writer.
Yeah, okay. And, I mean, the other thing is, and no one's necessarily mentioned it, but I always wonder if it's under the currents. What am I trying to say? Anyway,
if there's an undercurrent.
Undercurrent. That's
of.
It. Yes, undercurrent of. That's what I'm trying to say. That she's Christian and she believes in God, and so that she's got the faith element. And there's definitely
that doesn't show up in in her writing necessarily.
Well, Passage apparently it does. I haven't read Passage, but apparently it's quite strong in Passage. And it's in this book too.
Passage? No.
Doesn't it? Isn't it about life after death?
Yeah, but actually the character who's he's not a villain because, I mean, he's not, you know, dramatic enough to be the villain. But one of the sort of antagonistic characters is actually a if I remember correctly, quite a not a born again Christian, but he's quite solid in his belief that these near death experiences are evidence of heaven and the afterlife, and he's actually pitted against the protagonist character who doesn't believe that.
Yeah,
and,
she's and an atheist, book, isn't she?
Yeah, and the book comes down on. I think the book comes down actually. You could, I guess, read it either way. I think personally, it comes more strongly down to the side of these experiences aren't any sign of heaven, God, etc. Okay. That they are the bodies.
I've not read Passage, and I might be pulling this completely out of my anus. Yeah. You think I'm pulling it out of my anus?
Maybe.
I just wonder sometimes when someone notes their faith, whether sometimes people walk in with a prejudice against the writer. Because she gets a lot of flack. You're right. There's a lot of shit flung at her. And you've got to ask why. Is it because she's a woman? Is it because she's a popular science fiction writer, gender not relevant? Is it because she's not she doesn't get up at every day and say, I'm Christian, love me, but that there is a religious aspect to her? Is that the reason? Or is it just because people think her books are shit? And it might just come down to the words, but you read the books and think, well, they're just crap. But I don't think they are. I mean, I've read two books. I don't think Blackout All Clear is crap. I just don't think it deserves an award.
Which is fair. And I'd probably agree with you there. I think it's a phenomenal, I mean, in terms of the scope of the book and the work that's obviously been put into it, I think it's to be applauded. And I really enjoyed reading it, and I'm glad I read it.
And I'm glad that probably Kat never enjoyed read it again. And I'm glad Kat was mesmerised and entranced by it.
Yes, and Kat's mother.
And Kat's mum, yeah. And I can see, because, you know, she makes the point about Kat's mum being, what was it?
Didn't want it to end.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's saying,
And she was an evacuated child, her mum.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and it had, not nostalgic, you wouldn't call it nostalgic, but it had real resonance.
Resonated.
Exactly. And okay, that's great. I'm glad. Yeah. We're not here to shit on the, well, we are shit on the but we're not here to, you know, ruin that experience. And if we did for you, Kat, we apologise. But that's what you're probably going to get with this podcast. We're not always going to be loving.
We can be nasty.
We are nasty. Not we can be.
But anyway, we're going to move on from that because it's not, you know, Connie Willis Redux.
Watch the Twitter feed.
Found it really interesting that, Connie Willis aside, the idea of having two different reading experiences, which may be opposed to each other but may not necessarily cancel them out. So I'm quite happy to have said I really enjoyed reading those books. I don't regret reading them. I love that I've read them, and I haven't, that primary experience hasn't changed for me. And that sits quite well in this case. It doesn't always, but in this case it sits quite well with me with my retrospective experience, which is a bit more critical and a little disappointed.
It's like the Hollywood film you watch, which you love watching at the time. You walk out soon and go, oh, that was a bit stupid in some ways, but you still enjoyed it because, you know.
No, see, I can't do that.
No,
and that's,
well,
I think this is but possibly it's the strength of the book, because I usually can't do that. Usually if I am picky about something, it completely trashes.
As I think we're going to find out in the next hour.
So we've talked about Feed before. We've talked about Connie Willis's double header before and just then. The third book on the Hugo list is Cryoburn by Lois McMaster Bujold, which neither of us has read.
No.
And I haven't actually read any of that saga.
The Miles Vorkosigan books.
Yep, I haven't read any of them. You've read a few, but
I've read about eight or nine.
You're not caught up, so you...
No, I'm well behind. Yeah. Unlike Alex from Galactic Suburbia, who read all 14 or 15 books in like 3 weeks.
And
and survived the experience. I mean, they're great books. They are the easiest reads.
Yeah, I do actually... I do intend to get to them one day.
No, you don't.
I know I do.
No, I don't.
Because I'll tell you why in a minute.
Oh, okay.
So we haven't read those. We're not going to read them. Yeah.
We're not going to read Cryoburn.
For Cryoburn. No.
We're not Alex.
So we did ask, because that's the thing, I would want to. I mean, this is book 14.
It's about that 14, 15.
I couldn't possibly just read this I would want to read them all.
No, so. And you need to get the development of Miles
exactly.
as a person.
So I wasn't going to just read this one book just to fill out the list. However, one of our lovely listeners, Tahani, from Fablecroft, actually, sent us a lovely email giving a rundown about Cryoburn. So I'm going to read that now. This is the listener feedback podcast. So here's what Tahani has to say about Cryoburn. Cryoburn was always going to be on the Hugo shortlist this year. It could have been the worst book Bujold ever wrote, although to be fair, Bujold's worst book would probably still be better than a lot of the dross out there. It could have had Miles becoming a wife-beating asshole who overthrows the Imperium and sets himself up as Emperor, which we all know are two things that could never happen in the Vukosian world. And we still would have eaten it up and voted it onto that list. Why? Well, we waited 8 years for this book, with only one tiny little story, 6 years earlier, to in any way fill the Vukosigan void in those who had been reading for decades. 8 years for the latest in one of the most beloved space opera series of all time. Yeah, it was always going to make the list. Does it deserve to be there? If it was a first book by a novelist not already beloved and much rewarded by the Hugo voters? Yes, I think so. Being perfectly honest, and having just reread the Vukosigan saga in its entirety, following internal chronology, Cryoburn is not Bujold's best book. That honour probably belongs to Mirror Dance, or Memory, or possibly A Civil Campaign, all amazing in different ways. The depths of those books, the brilliant stories and awesome characters, drawn so vividly that you just want to go out into space and have a cup of tea with them, is very hard to match. But wow. Cryoburn is good anyway. I reread it just yesterday and realised how much I'd actually missed that first time round in the excited rush of must read immediately. While it's one of the few books in the saga that takes us outside of Miles' own head for much of the story, there's good reason for this and it's done well. The characters are solid, as we expect from Bujold, and Armsman Roik, a relatively minor player for the last couple of books, barring the lead in the story Winterfair Gifts, gets a more central role, which is nice. The plot is, as usual, less straightforward than it might first appear, and pulls together well in the end without being obvious. If there's one thing I missed, it's more of Ekaterin and Cordelia, but who's to argue with more Miles? Having said all that, it's important to note that Cryoburn on its own stands up well. If you've never read a Vukosigan book, sure, you'll miss a little of the depth of backstory. And the kick at the end, well, that might not hit you like it did the long-time readers, when just three words can bring you to tears, the author has done her job. But Bujold does well in this too, giving clues to important events or characters of books gone by, if you need to know them. And to put it simply, Bujold is just a damn good writer, who has created a brilliant set of characters to people a massively realised world. Cryoburn has all the elements that made us love the saga in the first place, but, as with every other book she's written, still feels fresh and new. I will be very surprised if this one doesn't take the gong this year, not just for its own self, but it's going to be pretty tough to beat the Bujold love.
I give you 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10?
Well, it was good reading. It wasn't good as the cat one. That was pretty good.
So you're giving Cryoburn 8 out of 10 based
on No. Well, yeah.
So we haven't read it and I don't think we'll make any more
But there's a couple of points
it.
She makes. I mean, she's right, it's 8 years because...
It's a long time
because
to wait.
Bujold was writing the Chalian books and other things.
It's a long time to wait.
She also got Miles out a bit, which, you know, long-serving running character. I don't know if that means it's going to win because there's all this love for – I mean, it's interesting it got nominated to begin with, but I don't know if it's going to win. I can't see Connie losing.
Okay.
But it's number two. If there's one – I mean
– So yeah. It's a Willis Bujold.
It's one of them two.
Okay. All right.
As depressing as that might be for some people listening to this podcast. No, well, I think some people are going to be quite depressed by that, it comes down to a series of 14, you know, one of 14 books.
But, you know, these are awards.
I'm not going to mention the Connie Willis.
The thing is, awards are awards, and as with...
No, could we not have that discussion?
No, I'm just saying, it happens with the Academy Award. It happens with a whole bunch of awards that people will get an award for something which more properly reflects a body of work or it's a lifetime achievement. And it's nominally done for a... work, but
true.
You know, what's happening is something is being recognised that's above and beyond that particular movie or book or whatever it is that person has won an award for.
I nominated this year. Did you nominate? Because I'm a supporting member of Arena.
No, I didn't because I'm not a supporting member.
No, you can nominate.
Oh, no, I nominate. Sorry, I nominated. I didn't vote because I'm not a supporting member.
Okay, well, I want
to
be
part
of
it. I was going to and I forgot.
I don't want to be one of those people who whinges and says, people only vote for their friends or nominate their friends and we never get really a good idea of what the books are. So I've said, well, bugger it. I want to try and shape me on my own with my one nomination. What should be on the list?
You did rob China Mieville of half a Hugo. So
I did, didn't I?
Did.
I did.
So it's totally on your head.
I know. For a book I didn't actually understand either. Yeah. No, well, I didn't read and didn't understand.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway, let's not go there. Yeah. But but the point is that there is a lot of, I mean, you've got to wonder what Cryburn is doing on the Hugo list. And I think what Tahani says is it's partly because it's still a good book, good read.
Yeah, apparently. I mean,
good read.
This was going to say, based on what Tahani says.
And Bujold is another really, really readable writer. I mean, you will swallow it when you do finally read the 14 books.
That's
you'll
it.
Swallow it down.
Based on, because I was, there was one of those things that I, you know, it's like, oh, yeah. Oh, maybe one day. But I read what Tahani had to say. I was like, I really want to read that book now. It's like I want to read the saga. So
yes, I said you'll swallow it down, but also because 8 years in the making, everyone felt that they needed to nominate it.
Yeah, cool.
I just don't think it'll win, but that's me. Right. Okay, anyway.
So that's our I guess little wrap up of the other three, and now we can move on to the two books that we're actually going to be talking about for this podcast. So neither of us recommended it to either of us, which is interesting.
Well, that's because we're doing a special Hugo. I thought we covered this 20 minutes ago. this is the anomaly episode where there were no recommendations. We've like broken the podcast and
no, because
it'll never recover.
Yeah, no, I'm just interested to see what the dynamic will be with these books now.
Oh, because we didn't actually recommend them to each other.
Because neither of us have had a book that we've really loved and has said, read this.
Yeah, true.
So interesting.
Point. No, that's
so
good.
Okay, so we'll start with 100,000 Kingdoms by N.K.
I'm going to read the back blurb.
You're going to read the back.
Because I've got the book here.
You have a back blurb. Mine didn't have a blurb.
Didn't it?
No, I just had a whole bunch of quotes from people on the back.
Really? Where's your copy?
Yeah, it's the paperback. You've got a B-format paperback?
Yeah.
I've just got the paperback and all it's got is a whole bunch of quotes.
This is really good podcasting. Oh, so it's a miniature version of the cover.
Yeah.
That is a disgusting back cover. It's just this big yellow slab of quotes.
And I didn't even notice until I was halfway through the book because, you know, I had to read the book anyway. And then I just wanted to get a pricey while I was halfway through it and went, oh, there is none. So I guess that's a huge vote of confidence on the part of the publisher.
Yeah.
That you don't put the pricey on the back. You just have a whole bunch of blurbs from other people saying how great
the book
is.
I assume this is the format that I've got, which is called the B format, that probably sold quite well, so they didn't have to bother.
Yeah.
But
it's
anyway,
interesting. I don't think I've ever seen that before. Anyway.
Gods and mortals, power and love, death and revenge, she will inherit them all. Yane, this is the other thing. I didn't know how to pronounce any of these names.
Oh, I think I was saying Yaney in my head. I don't know.
Yane,
alternated.
Is an outcast from the barbarian north, but when her mother dies under mysterious circumstances, she is summoned to the majestic city of Sky, a palace above the clouds with the lives of gods and mortals intertwined. There, to her shock, Yane, or whatever her name is,
pick a pronunciation.
Yane is named one of the potential heirs to the king, but the throne of the 100,000 kingdoms is not easily won, and Yane is thrust into a vicious power struggle with a pair of cousins she never knew she had. As she fights for her life, she draws ever closer to the secrets of her mother's death and her family's blood history. Also nominated for the World Fantasy Award.
That's a pretty good pricey.
Yeah, it is. Actually, it's what's great about it is that it, in fact, only gives you the first 10 pages of the book.
Mm. Well, it's nominated for the World Fantasy Award. It was also nominated for the Nebula, and it won the Locus Award for Best First Novel.
Yes.
So that's its pedigree. So
N.K. Jemisin. Anyway.
What the fuck was that?
Because I'm waiting for you. So I'm waiting for you to start.
I thought you were starting.
No, look, okay.
So.
Okay, I've got to say, it was a bit like Blackout or Clear. It was reasonably entertaining to read, but a few things shat me about it. Number one, which I know is a problem you had, because we just spoke about this before, is the 1980s Star Trek episode feel to Yaney's culture, which is dominated by women, where men are apparently
a matriarchal culture.
Yeah,
but it's just flipped.
But it's just flipped. There's no, we don't give much detail. Maybe the next two books, which I know are separate stories set in the same world, may provide more information. But it just feels like, yeah, they've just done she's just done a gender split, a gender swap, sorry, so that it's now the women controlling and the men are the weaker ones. And
they're not the weaker ones. And
well,
I don't think that really works. Actually,
the culture didn't make any sense at all to me.
No,
at all.
I found that,
but it felt like it was an old. You know, it was an episode of Star Trek you always remember when the women are controlling everything.
And look how bad it still is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's always interesting to read worlds where there are matriarchal cultures, or in fact just cultures that operate on different gender lines than what a lot of human cultures do. But this one I didn't buy, and I actually found it really. I mean, essentially, this is a rape culture, is what it is.
Because they get deflowered at the girls at their time of coming or their first blood or whatever it is. Is it their first?
Well, it's said that what used to happen in this culture was the women, being warrior women, would actually kidnap young men and I think circumcise them, keep them in captivity, sort of break them and sometimes marry them or sometimes not.
Yes.
It's not that clear. And that was – they were sort of stopped from doing that because it was too barbaric. And so now what happens for – and that was like a rite of passage for a woman to do this, to kidnap a young boy and so on. And so now the rite of passage is that the girls get put into the forest for a month.
Yeah, they have
to fend for themselves with no anything. And then when they come back, they have a sort of a public combat with a man, and if they win, they get to control the sexual encounter that follows, and if they don't, then the man rapes them, and that's meant to teach them how to submit to authority or something like that, I think is the phrase used. It was really icky.
And not critiqued at all.
And well, unless you say this character Yane, who went through that and wasn't victorious in her combat, and then she killed the guy. So I mean, it's a culture that's based on sexual violence, and it's not a consensual sexual violence, which would have been really interesting. But it's not that. It's essentially a rape culture.
So it's not a form of sadomasochism.
No, it doesn't seem to be from what's said. Yeah. And within that culture, I actually don't see how that matriarchy survives. I don't see how that matriarchy happens.
Yeah, because at least in those Star Trek type science fiction episodes, the men are little nerdy guys who have no strength at all. Whereas in this, you're right, the impression is that the men are as equal in terms of strength anyway.
Yeah.
They're physically like men are, and so how's the power
exactly
shifted in such
and
a way?
If you yeah so anyway I mean that
but it's such a sketch
it's there a is, small it's such a small little part of the thing
it is, it's a more part of the novel and it's a sketch of a culture but the but she the Yane comments constantly she's in this sky castle where the gods and the Aramari live is it Aramari because I'm doing
Aramari.
And she constantly says, I'm not one of them, I'm not one of them, I'm a Dar. Because they're all an evil bunch of bastards and terrible people. I'm a Dar.
And they are.
They're terrible, terrible people. Yeah. I mean, evil. But in a sense, there's nothing to compare against because her culture, you're thinking, well, that's a broad sketch of nothing. I mean, it's a broad sketch of a bad science fiction idea. And what am I comparing? I mean, what are you, as you as a character? Yeah. And then therefore, as a result, I struggled to get into her as a character. I didn't really know what to hold on to.
She's, you know, compared to some other female characters, I guess she's more forthright and I mean, she gets told that she's being blunt quite a lot and so on. But I didn't see that particular culture that she's come from, this matriarchal culture which is grounded in sexual violence.
Yeah.
I didn't see that manifested in her. And she's the princess of this culture. She's not just some girl.
She's privileged
within the
culture.
She's the one who's like set to rule her culture. And I didn't see that culture seeping through her in her relations with anyone else. especially with, you know, the god who she has a sexual relationship with. I didn't see that. It was, yeah, it was strange.
Yeah, there's no doubt that Jemison's trying to play the whole fish out of water thing with this character. Yeah. But she doesn't, yeah, there's no reference back to the way of her culture to how she's interpreting this culture that
yeah,
she's now in.
Yeah, I don't know. It really felt like kind of a, oh, it's a matriarchal culture and everything's flipped around and so on. But it just felt a bit shallow to that as a point of difference.
And the Aramaeri culture.
Aramaeri.
It's A-R-A-M-E-R-I, yep. I think. Aramaeri culture is as well just so black and evil, and there's no shades of grey to it at all.
Mm.
So, I mean, again, you had really nothing to hold on to. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's interesting to look at, but
I
go,
I didn't enjoy the book at all. I couldn't wait for it to be finished. I'm sorry.
I mean, there's one servant guy who befriends her, and he's a nice enough bloke.
Yeah.
But that's about it. I mean, I'll tell you what I loved. I love the fact that this is a book where it has gods, and they're actually gods.
Oh, the gods are there.
From page 15, you've got gods. It's not one of those books where the gods either A, appear at the very end.
Yeah.
Or B, they're called gods, but actually you just find out that they're people, humans, which is a bit more powerful than everyone else.
Gods.
They're real gods. And I actually
expect
there to be some hint towards the middle or the end that they're science fiction-y, like they're aliens, but they're not. They're fucking
gods. No, it's a fantasy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I like that. I mean, the other thing in terms of drawing your culture, and again, spoilers, but you guys all know that by now. The Aramaeri, the rules of succession in this culture, which goes back
a long time,
centuries.
Following the First War of the Gods.
To become the leader of Sky, which is the Aramaeri city, which is formed and kept by magic, by the gods who are enslaved and used as weapons and household appliances.
Yes, and sex objects and anything else you can think of.
To become the ruler of this culture, the ritual of succession is you have to kill someone. You have to kill the person you love the most.
Yep.
And this will prove that you're able to rule. You have the strength of character to rule. You have the will to rule. You're willing to make hard choices. It's a really brutal thing, but it sheds a lot of light on this culture.
Yep.
Which was cool. But then for some reason, which is never explained, the two cousins who were then vying for the throne, they don't have to kill anyone they love? Because the king just brings his granddaughter in and they're going to kill her. And
yeah, it's once again.
Why is this ritual, which is – and again, the ritual is done to please the god, to please –
Itempus.
Brighter Tempus, who's the one god who's still allowed to be a god rather than a slave.
You're 100%
this is
right.
done to please him. And he's manifest. It's not a superstition. It's not like, oh, if we don't do this, the rivers will flood and blah, blah, blah. No. Your fucking god is there.
And he appears.
He will bitch slap you.
He turns up and he'll give you a kick of the ass.
Exactly. Yeah. So how does this ritual get undermined?
But this is the thing. Yeah, you're right, because the king is once again...
For the convenience of the king who wants to find out what happened. I mean, does this ritual, which is...
The king who's in power now killed his wife.
He killed his wife.
And I suppose the sacrifice is once again...
Who was Yaini's mother's mother.
Mother.
Yaini's grandmother.
Yes.
I mean, he killed
grandmother.
His wife.
But I suppose what the point Jemison's making is that the king once again... He's making another sacrifice.
But it's not the king who gets to make
the
sacrifice.
I know, it's not meant to, but that's what I didn't get.
It's the succeeding ruler who has to make that sacrifice.
Yes.
And neither of them give a shit about Yaini. Their sacrifice is nothing.
And also they don't give a shit about each other.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing I didn't get.
Yeah.
In a society where everyone basically fucking hates each other, it'd be bloody hard to find someone that you love that you have to kill. I mean, it just so happens, and again, it's one of the little conceits of this book, that it just so happens that the king, Decatur, I think his name is, happened to have fallen in love with the woman he married.
Yeah.
Because he didn't marry her for love. It's a bit like Yaini's mother married the Dar warrior.
Yeah.
But she did that to shit off her father, but also...
Kind of fell in love with him.
But later fell in love with him.
Yeah.
Just how
I know, but this is the thing. So I don't know
what I'm saying. It's not an easy society to love in. It's not like you're loving people left, right, and center,
which would make the sacrifice even bigger, right?
Yeah,
because it doesn't have to be someone you've married. I mean, it could be your mother, it could be your child.
Correct.
It's just someone you.
But no
you
one gives a shit about anyone in this society.
Which I think was a throw. It felt to me like a throwaway line when Janey said at some point, "Oh, is that because I'm? Is that why I'm here? Because neither of my cousins actually care about anyone." But it was a throwaway line. Yeah. And if this ritual is so important, I mean, it's what defines succession. It's what validates the ruler who ascends that throne because they have done this.
Yep.
How does that get just tossed out?
Yeah.
And I like that world. I love that world building. I thought that was an amazing ritual of succession. But then it's abandoned.
It felt like she wanted to have a lot of her cake and eat it. She wanted to have, you know, and it's really cool. She wanted to have great ideas. She wanted to have gods in a story that appear on page 15. And they're gods. They're actual fucking manifested gods. And they have powers, although they're inhuman. They've been trapped. They've been enslaved, as you said. They're in human bodies. I didn't get that all the time. At times they seemed extremely powerful. And at times they didn't seem to be able to do much. And I know each person's got a mark on their forehead that stops the gods from killing them or whatever. But and there's also these conceits where the Dark Lord, Night Lord, whatever he's called, he, during particular times, at the time of Twilight, is able to manifest his power a bit more. And there's a whole Jekyll and Hyde thing going on as well. But I never got the feel. It always felt like they were extremely powerful but not powerful. Maybe that's the clever thing about the book. I don't know.
Yeah.
The hard thing is, if you're going to have gods in a book, especially if they're real gods who are really powerful, then there's no sense of drama or increasing threat because these things can just click their fingers and bang, you're done. And so she's done.
She's done
a clever thing by enslaving them, by having a bigger god who only appears at the end, enslave these gods.
Yes,
which is good because she means she can have her cake, which has have gods and eat it by having still dramatic tension. But sometimes I think the line isn't straddled that well. I feel that, you know, that the – because basically the Dark Lordy god, if he's ordered, can
– Nahardoth.
Nahardoth, thank you. He can wipe out an entire civilization if ordered. So he's
– But only if ordered.
If only if ordered, which is – and she's explained that very well. Hmm. But there are times I thought – because there's all this stuff about the order has to be really carefully –
Well, it's like,
has to be really carefully given. You know, you can't miss – because they take you literally – And yet
they'll take you literally, and they'll also
abuse it.
If you leave room for license, they will take that license.
Yeah, and that's really not dealt with.
I don't know.
Considering how much people talk to these people,
that's true.
You're talking to them all the bloody time. You'd think you would say very little to them other than commands. You wouldn't have conversations with them because anything – and she again gets around by saying, well, no, you've got to voice it as a command. Yeah. But you think you'd be fucking careful what you said to these guys because at any moment you could go, oh, shit, did I say that? And next thing you know, the whole fucking planet's a black hole. So
let's go to hell. Oh, shit.
Yeah. That's right. So I was
fuck
a bit,
me. Damn.
Again, I know what she was trying to do and I think she basically more or less pulled it off, but there are times I thought, But anyway, yes, you were going to say before I really interrupted you three times.
No, it's because you were talking about having a cake and eating it too. And the thing that I found, story aside, the style of the book, it's written in it's not an unusual style, but
it's first person.
It's first person, but there's sort of an unreliable narrator, but not really an unreliable narrator.
Oh, that was the other
narrator.
Thing I didn't get. Sorry. Yeah, please.
And so you'll get these segments of the book where the narrator is talking to someone. She speaks in the second person, like you know this or you don't know this, more to the point. And there'll be fragmented bits and she seems to be having a problem with her memory. And it's quite convenient because, you know, she'll go, oh, by the way, I forgot to tell you that this thing happened. which, I mean, if that's what you're doing, that's okay. And she handled it reasonably well. There were a couple bits where I thought, that's just irritating. How can you not remember? You remembered all this other stuff in excruciating detail, but that bit, that really important bit. Anyway, she handled it reasonably well, but the problem is that then turns the 100,000 Kingdoms into a told story by a meta author, the meta author being Janey.
Yeah.
When does she tell the story?
Yeah, oh, you've got this problem.
See, here's the thing.
You've always got
because
this problem.
Because the story is – and I don't mean like when does she sit down and write the story. I just mean from at what point.
Yeah.
I have this problem because this is what you do. If you choose to write with this style and this structure, you've got to do it correctly.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. So now there's a meta element, and the meta element has to be realized at some point.
Exactly.
Later on the book.
So you've got this meta author.
Yeah.
And for most of the book, the meta author seems to be quite confused, and has memory lapses, and has points of, you know, akin to sort of a dissociative disorder, and you know, it's kind of muddled, and but by the end of the book. It's supposed to be because, and spoilers, Yaini has had the murdered goddess, Enifa, I may have got that wrong, within her. And so there's sort of a split personality and a struggle for dominance between their souls. And this is all kind of making her head hurt. And that's why she's having problems with memory and keeping things in order and not being sure why she's telling you some things and not other. But at the end of the book, it all gets resolved within her, right? She gets killed, she gets brought back, she becomes a goddess, she becomes herself as the goddess kind of thing, and she's all complete and she's lucid and she's clear and she's fine.
So when did
the story get told?
Yeah.
Because at the end, she's fine.
Yeah.
I think the
idea is that when the stone, at the time of the succession, there's that stone that she has to pick up. And that stone has Enifa's other essence in it. And when she gets killed, because she died, there's spoiler, she gets stabbed, this is Yaini, her soul gets sucked into the stone, and that's where all that conversation is happening. And then the stone gets dragged into Yaini's corpse, resurrecting it, and that's when then we've moved on. So that happens like the last 10 pages.
That only works if the narrative written after that is written in present tense, because the entire book is written in past tense, except sometimes for those bits.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. So you're saying
the past tense continues to the end of it, continues to the last page. Yeah. So all of that story is being told by this meta author.
It's all happening in that infinite moment during the succession when all that stuff is going. That's when it's all happening. But you're right. The moment the rock, the little stone, goes into
the moment her soul is clarified, the moment she has lucidity and she knows exactly what's happening and can see everything. It should be in present tense.
Yeah, that's a good point. This is one of your major bugbears.
It's a meta author problem. If you're gonna write a meta author, do it right.
There's one swear word in the book. Do you know what it is? It's amazing. There is one swear word. Now, someone can prove me wrong and say there's more. I mean, the word whore is in there, but there is one swear, and I note swear words. I don't know. I've got a fascination with them.
What is the swear word?
It's cunt.
It's cunt.
That is the only swear word in the whole book. There's no fuck. I couldn't find one fuck in there. There might be a shit, but I don't think there is.
Mm.
It's cunt. It's amazing. I just jumped out and I thought,
you have no real point to make.
It's not a criticism of the book. I just thought PG-13 films in America get their PG-13, but they're allowed to use fuck once.
Right.
And I just wonder whether she thought,
maybe she traded in all her fucks for a cunt.
Yeah, for a cunt. That's what I thought. She traded all the fucks in for a cunt.
I
bet you N.K. Jemisin never thought the book would be described in such a way. But really, that just blew me away. Can I say one other thing?
Yeah.
Did you feel that if the whole thing could have been done by the 1970s BBC in one set, basically? It's a book. No, it's a book called 100,000 Kingdoms.
Yeah.
But basically, it's all set in three corridors and this sky palace with a couple of, like, the Oboulette room and the room that the succession room, and there's a – but it's basically five rooms that the story's set in, and a few corridors and a couple of bedrooms, and they go to dark three pages.
There's going to be two more books. I assume the world will be expanded upon
developed. But when you've been just watching, as I have, Game of Thrones, which is so expansive, and I know the book is, you know, as expansive, this thing feels like, seriously, it was done on a 1970s Doctor Who budget. It does. I know it sounds critical, but it really is so – is so limited.
There's an economy of geography.
Yes, very much so. It does. I know that's fine. I mean, that's not a real criticism. It's just
This book is very much about the political intrigues happening within within the court.
Yeah, within one place. Sky. And over a short period of time. It's not exactly 12 months ago. It's over only a couple of weeks. So I understand why. It's just for a book that's about with gods and it's got 100,000 kingdoms.
You wanted a bit more.
I expected it to be really epic. No, I just expected it to be hugely epic. When it turned out to be, you know, five corridors and three rooms, I found, well, it's intimate. But it'd be a lot better
Did you like the bit with the Dalek in the corner and the...
Don't make fun of what I'm saying. No. I notice these things. I notice swear words and I notice budgets. And it has a low. Although there are I'll say this, the god stuff is great. There's a lot of there's one sex scene that literally she's blown out of the universe. I not only get squeamish with sex scene, I like, you know, the odd sex scene. But this was actually really good. I did like the idea that she's fucking the god and literally he takes her into Lovecraft land or something. I don't know. It gets all very Cthulhu and odd and weird. And that was nice. But why do you think it's getting so much love, considering neither of us really loved it?
I don't know.
But let's get into the heads of everyone else.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
Imagination? Because there are some imaginative stuff there. The world building is quite good.
There is. Well,
it falls apart, as you've pointed out. But
there's interesting ideas in the world building.
But the cultures are basically sketches. They're not really.
Yeah. So I honestly don't know. There's lots of books which are really popular and everyone raves about that I just can't come at. So this is another one of those.
Okay.
Right. really, I don't know. It's
all right.
You know, well, I mean, it's well written for the most part. It's you know, in terms of the prose, it speeds along. I mean, she does cheat with the meta author, but you know,
but that's your bug there.
But yeah, I don't know.
It's just a shame that the culture of both places, of both Darren Amarais, doesn't matter. I'll get that name right one day because I'm going to use it so often after this podcast. We just they were handled better, and it'd be some, and that she was actually a more interesting character. There's no jokes in it. It's not funny.
It doesn't have to be funny.
No, but there's not even dramatic books. It's so earnest throughout the whole book. I know there's a lot at stake, but again, Game of Thrones, and trust me, I'm not 100% positive about Game of Thrones, but there is some really funny moments in that. Okay, the TV series.
The book or the
TV series. But the book's very faithful. Anyway, the point is, don't know why I brought that in.
I don't know why you brought that in.
Let's move on.
Let's not compare this to other books. No, so anyway, that's 100,000 Kingdoms, which neither of us were too fussed on.
Yeah, so obviously not my Hugo Award winner.
No, there are better books on the list, I would think. I think Feed is a more accomplished book than 100,000. I mean, I didn't like Feed. And I had, I think, very valid reasons for not liking Feed, but I think it's a much more accomplished
and
book.
And it has the same problem you raised with the meta.
It does.
So it's got the same problem there. It also has the same problem.
But only really right at the end.
So does this. Only really right at the end.
No, because it's threaded all through.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, all right.
Yeah. No, but I think Feed is a more accomplished book than The 100,000 Kingdoms. I mean, you know, they're both, I guess, first books in trilogies.
But Feed's also got a... pretty, and we won't spoil Feed for people who haven't heard the Feed podcast and don't want to get Feed spoiled, but it also has a pretty sketchy political thing going on. So like this, but I think on a sentence to sentence level, I'd rather read, well, I've bought Deadline, whereas I'm not sure I'll buy the second book of this series.
Yeah. See, I think with Feed, hey, at least I can enjoy hating that character.
Now,
where I was just kind of meh about Yaney.
Did you like the Dervish House though?
Oh, we're moving on.
Absolutely,
that was
segue.
A lovely segue.
And you can read the back blurb. Do you have a copy of the Dervish House anywhere?
I do.
You, there it is.
There it is. This one actually does have a back blurb and a couple of quotes, but you know, it has a blurb.
They're not called blurbs. What are they called?
Oh, fly copy or whatever you want to call it. You should bring this up every time, don't you?
I love your face.
So they, you want me to read it?
Well, I did the first one.
Okay, so this is, we should say who's by.
Oh, yes.
Ian McDonald.
Ian McDonald.
The Dervish House.
I'm not related to it.
Why would you be?
Because we're both Ians.
Ian's, right, sorry.
Because that's how it works.
That's how it works, right.
Yeah, a lot of Ian's are related. I don't know if you know that.
No,
statistics have been done. Please read the back blurb. Back blurb.
It is the hour, it is after the hour of prayer, but not yet the hour of money. Istanbul, queen of cities, wakes with a shout. The explosion goes almost unnoticed in the greater roar of the waking city. A flat crack, then silence. In the sleepy Istanbul district of Eskişehir stands a former whirling dervish house of Adem Dede. Over the space of 5 days of an Istanbul heatwave, six lives weave a story of corporate wheeling and dealing, Islamic mysticism, political and economic intrigue, ancient Ottoman mysteries, a terrifying new terrorist threat, and a nanotechnology with the potential to transform every human on the planet. And The Independent called it a brilliant jeweled machine of a novel.
Lovely.
Yes. That's not a bad blurb either.
Actually. No, that's a good one, that's and that doesn't one. Actually spoil too much either.
No. And as we did for that, I'll just give you a rundown. The Dervish House has already won the British Science Fiction Association Award for Best Novel and the Joseph Campbell Award as well. It was nominated for the Arthur C. Clarke, but Zoo City by Lauren Burkus won that one. And as we know, it's nominated for the Hugo, which is why we're talking about it.
Okay, I'll say it now. This is my winning book.
Ah.
But it doesn't mean I think it's perfect.
It's the book you want to win, not the book you think will win, though.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. That doesn't mean I think it's perfect. I think there's issues. Mm. I have issues with it.
Yeah.
But of the books that I've read, which is now four of the five, it's definitely the most audacious, awesome – audacious, imaginative –
Ambitious.
Yes. Yeah.
Have you read Brazil or River of Gods?
I have read Brazil. This is far better than Brazil. Suffers for some of the same issues. Brazil's great, except it meanders.
These are his previous two books.
I haven't read River of Gods. I read Brazil. Brazil, for me, meandered a bit. This also meanders at times.
Mm-hmm.
We're sort of wondering, where's this plot going? And also Brazil, more so than this one, seems to just suddenly have 50 pages of action and ends. Whereas this one, it's not 50 pages, it's more like 100 pages of action than ends.
yeah. Thursday.
Yeah, exactly. Thursday. Yeah. And that's something. It's told over 5 days. Brazil's told
it's
over.
It's a really concentrated. You said it is 5 days.
Yeah.
And it's divided up into the days. Friday's very short.
Yeah.
Friday's like the epilogue.
So really everything happens on the fourth day.
Yeah, four days.
I'm interested in pick 7 days.
I think it's just the business week. What happens on the weekend?
No. Well, no, there's a reason for that. I mean, it's a religious book and 7 days of creation. There's a lot of God stuff in there. I'm interested he didn't take the metaphor that.
What are you going to do on the weekend?
Oh, my God. First off, there's plenty you can do on the weekend.
People aren't going to work on a Sunday or a Saturday getting blown up on a tram.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I understand. I really do understand that. But there are things that can be done on the weekend. We don't all just sit in our houses.
But the book begins with that very specific episode of the suicide bomber on the tram.
Which could have happened on a busy Saturday. I don't know. Do trams run in Istanbul on Saturday?
Yeah, Layla wouldn't have been going to the job interview.
Oh, my God. Yes, all right. Okay, the plot dynamics wouldn't have worked. I'm just saying, all I'm saying is from a metaphoric level, which is it's a book which is steeped in culture and religion, interest in Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. So the three major Judeo, Christo, Islamo religions. That sounded very racist. I'm surprised. I just felt, why didn't you take it?
Can you say that again?
No, I don't want to say that ever again. I'm pretending I never said that. Why he didn't go 7 days. But now that I think about putting aside your plot shenanigans, it's so on the nose that it's a bit obvious and really enough.
Enough.
But. Can I say what doesn't work? Because I'll forget otherwise.
Do we want to say a little bit more about the book?
People have read it because we're spoiling it.
Yes, that's true. We spoiled it. We read the book.
I mean, it's got six characters. The lives of six people. They're all connected to the Dervish House with the title.
Yep.
Whether they have a
living
shop.
Living or working.
Living or near. They've either got a shop right next to it.
Yep.
And are married to the woman who has the shop right next to it.
or they're living in there.
Two characters.
Yep.
They're living in it, which I think is the other
four.
Four.
Yep.
Yeah. No. Yes.
Yes.
Yes, it is. So the other four. Yep.
Yep.
So
which is why it's the Dervish House, because they're all there.
Yeah. And
which is a little
convenient?
Well, it's convenient or it's pattern making. I mean, take your pick.
Yeah, I think it's clever.
Yeah. I mean, there are for the most part.
The problem is a lot rests on it.
For the most, I mean, there's very good reasons for four of the interlinked relationships. Two are a bit sketchy. Adnan,
that's sketchy.
That's a bit sketchier.
Yeah, how they connect. But
yeah.
It's nice, though. It's cute. The stuff that doesn't work for me is actually
He put a pronunciation guide in the front end, which I thought was very helpful.
You know what? I read it on a Kindle. And this, I don't know if it was something wrong with the letters or whatever, but I don't think that worked 100%.
Something wrong with it? Oh, they left the accents off?
No, the accents are there. I had a little number one in a lot of words.
Oh.
I bet you they're not in this.
No.
It's like a little number
I
one.
I have letters in my words.
Yeah, you had like, you didn't have like random numbers appear. In.
No, I did not have random numbers appear.
Give it to me, because this is, again, great audio. But yeah, so I apologize again about, just one thing quickly. You know how it's about the same length as the 100,000 Kingdoms, but the type's a lot smaller and it's a lot longer.
Oh, it's a so much longer read.
It took me a long time to read, but yeah. That doesn't mean I didn't like it. Anyway, oh, I see. Yeah, no, it is. It's a number one.
It's number one. What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's a little number one.
What?
The vowels, one of the vowels.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, it's the I without a dot.
No, it's a one.
Do you want to have a look at the – hello, listeners, bear with us. Do you want to have a look
you
at the one
above
it?
You know what that is? That's an I
without a dot.
I thought that was a one. Aren't I stupid? This is going to haunt me again, isn't it? Wow.
Oh, you make me happy.
Thanks. I'm glad I do that. Yeah. Anyway. The thing that
did you really think there was number
yes,
one?
Yes. I thought it was a number one. It's everywhere. What the fuck is this number one doing everywhere? Why do you try to represent this vowel situation with a number one? Why don't you use a two? Why don't you use an infinity symbol? Oh, Ian McDonald, what the fuck are you doing to me? And now I find out. That's because the Kindle is weird. No, it's not. It's lovely. Don't get a brain spasm because I did something stupid again.
I'm going to pass out.
Anyway, Dervish Sorry, House. The thing that annoyed me a bit.
Yes.
The whole story that didn't work for me is the mellified man stuff. The whole Dan Brown thing didn't need to be in the book, in my opinion. There you go. There's a comment. Doesn't go anywhere. Doesn't go anywhere.
And yet I thought the passage about the mellified man was one of the most beautiful sections in the book.
When she finds it?
No. When they're describing the process.
There's
I
a lot
love
of
love that.
But the problem is it's a novel on its own. I would rather he'd just written a book called The Mellified Man. And I didn't actually check to see if that's a real thing, or he just pulled that out of his ass.
It's not a real thing. It was a legend. It actually came out of China in the 15th, 14th century, like that. It was written in Chinese texts as a rumor that this mellified man existed in Arabia, and this is what some people in Arabia did. And
you mean this is what he wrote, or this is
China? No, I forget the Chinese scholar who was talking about it, but. Yeah, so it's a real legend, but it's come out of China about Arabia.
Okay. Well, anyway, it's a lovely idea about a person buried basically who eats honey for the last
until
he dies and then gets
buried in honey.
Honey, which is a lovely idea.
It's awesome.
And that his corpse is so sweet it can cure people, bloody, bloody, bloody. It's great.
Yeah.
But it's a novel on its own, and this is actually – I mean, there's really four novels in that novel. You've got a story about the mellified.
Well, it's kind of yeah. I mean,
you've got a story about they all connect. I get that, yeah. But you've got a story about a mellified man, and I think that's the one that connects the least out of the stories. You've got a story about a gas supply swindle. Mm-hmm. You've got a story about terrorism, and you've got a story about
nanotechnology.
About nanotechnology, that's right. And each of them actually,
but they all interlink.
They do, but you could disconnect them all four and do them as four separate novels.
You could.
No, I'm not saying like, I hate it when you get patronising like that.
No, I'm just saying you could, but I mean that's – but this is what the novel did. The novel took those stories and interlinked them.
All I'm saying is that most people just have one idea or two ideas per novel. He's actually shoved in four or five full novels into one book and somehow gotten away with it is what I'm trying to say. I'm actually trying to compliment Ian McDonald. I just think the mellified man stuff doesn't really connect because it's this whole Dan Brownish search for this mellified man. It doesn't connect for a number of reasons. A, because conveniently she finds it, the woman looking for it, which to me is a great crock of shit. The thing's been hidden for hundreds and hundreds of years, and she has this sudden Dan Brownish intuition. I'm saying Dan Brown because I don't know the character's name in the Dan Brown books. All right?
I don't know. Tom Hanks.
She has this amazing Tom Hanks bit where she goes, oh, my God, if you look at the city and the way it's set out and the letters and bloody, bloody, blah, it's all the name of God, it'll be there. And it is there.
Yeah. Well, it's not exactly there, but it's kind of there.
It's a crock of shit is what I'm saying. Yeah,
it's very convenient.
And that's the only thing that is convenient and silly. I mean, yes, they're all in the same house, but to me that just didn't work.
Well, I mean, and, it's beautiful. And Aisha's story doesn't, unless I'm missing something, doesn't actually – it's not an integral part of the overall story of the novel.
No, except that it's a catalyst for her husband to make a deal at the end – that will clear her name.
But if she's not there, why would her name need to be cleared?
No, that but like well,
she, you know what I mean? There's nothing in her story that needs to be except for the little half Quran. But I mean that and again, that's quite a twee.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it just so happens to have been traced and sold to this woman who's in So I mean her story could actually be pulled out wholesale.
Which is what I was saying at the beginning.
No, but all of the others interconnect.
Yes. Right,
all of the others are telling one facet of this big story.
And I'm saying that Ian McDonald should have done a novel called The Mellified Man. Aisha's
story could be pulled out and it wouldn't affect.
No, and it's hurt the most by the 5-day
structure.
Whereas
any other story that you pulled out.
It's hurt the most by the 5-day structure.
Yeah, it is, because this is something that should have taken weeks, months, years. To find.
You know, there's this whole thing about you get obsessed for the search and she gets obsessed
in
by
3 days.
But then it gets solved a day later. So, you know, not much of an obsession.
Yeah.
That was my the spat. All that aside, it's a smart book. There's a couple of people. Well, one reviewer had noted that he didn't warm to the characters, and I found that in the first 100 pages, I was going.
I found it really slow. Not in a I'm really bored kind of way, but just a very slow meandering kind of a start as it sort of coalesced for maybe about the first third.
Well, first I was shocked by the fact that there's a stork in the first page, 2 pages. That thing about the stork flying through.
Oh, but it's one of those things you can imagine a movie credit, right? It's like the bloody what is it in Forrest Gump? Is it a feather? Is it a leaf? That thing which is overhead and it then zooms you down to the street and. You know.
Why do you think I know what's in the Forrest Gump? I haven't seen Forrest Gump in 15 years.
But there's an
terrorist attack.
Yeah.
On a tram where a woman's head blows up. No one's killed.
No one's killed except the woman.
Except the woman.
Because she was actually not wanting to blow anyone up. She was just releasing the nano.
But we don't find that out till later.
No.
But then it's 100 pages of a novel in search of a plot. You feel.
Yeah,
it's
setting up characters on a chessboard. You can kind of feel the novel setting them up with
Jan.
Although
you could also feel it's a novel in search of an actual story, a little bit.
I didn't really care about Nejdet very much.
He's by far the most bland character.
I like little boy. I like Giorgio's.
His stuff with the little boy. I mean, he's writing young adult stuff now, and I don't know if this was a test run for him. But the stuff with Can, I think the name.
Jan.
Oh, that's because of the pronunciation. Yes. Yeah, sorry. Remember that number one. The stuff with Jan is wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, you've got this kid who is deaf by.
Well, he's not deaf. No, but sorry, it's a joke. They say that all the way through the book. It's a heart condition.
Condition, yeah. If he gets a sudden noise, he'll drop dead.
Yeah. Which is a real condition.
Yes, it is. I wasn't wondering if it was a real condition. But the moment someone says at the start of a novel, like, who's its guns on the wall, you know?
If the gun gets put on the table by the end of the play, it better be shot.
Yeah. Well, you know, the moment you're told that this kid's got a heart condition, that if he hears a sudden noise, he's going to drop dead.
Yeah.
You know something's going to happen about the heart condition. But that said, all that stuff with Jan.
Yeah, and the bit bots. Oh, I want the robots. What? I love that.
But didn't they feel a bit too – that would be convenient? They were a bit too sentient towards the end, you felt?
No, I don't – no, I never got sentient. I got – they must be expensive.
They are cute.
But I figured his parents are on a massive guilt trip and have just bought him.
And there's no doubt that the old man has helped.
He seems to have hacked them a little and maybe ramped up their –
the CPU power.
Their capabilities.
My processing unit.
Yes.
Did you get that?
But they're awesome.
Did you get that?
What?
My processing unit.
Yeah.
That's anyway. From Terminator.
I know.
My, what does he say? My mother. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I thought they were great. And I thought the Jan stuff and the Giorgio stuff was really good.
That's a wonderful character. And again, I don't know how he fitted into this one novel, that he's given this older man, not only does he get we find out his whole story, we get this wonderful arc with this woman who comes back into his life who he, in a sense, betrayed others to save mm-hmm. her, which all comes and then links him still into the whole ongoing plot. It's really well done.
It is.
And he gets a really good moment of revenge against another academic who'd fucked him over previously. That is a great scene.
Yeah. I did like – I mean, no, it's really, really intricate, and it all does come – I mean, I have to say the last third had a lot more pacing to it and a lot more
– Yeah, it's like Brazil. It's all a rush at the end. And that's my only problem. I don't know – You just feel like McDonald's.
You know what my other problem, and I do like it, but I think overall I'm leaning actually towards meh rather than brilliant.
No, you're wrong. Look, I don't. I mean, Alex called totally, it the greatest novel
not,
ever written.
I'm
it's not
totally
that,
but, meh, but
why? Come on, explain your meanness.
Well, by the like, I mean, okay, you can look at it as pattern forming, and you can say it's actually not. It's like what's it? One of the M. Night Shyamalan's movie with the water and the aliens. What's it called?
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, I know.
You know, and people say, it's such a coincidence. Well, it's not a coincidence with the water.
Science.
It's all science. It's about patterns. The movie wasn't about coincidences. It was actually about patterns.
It wasn't about aliens dying of water.
Yeah. And so The Dervish House is about patterns and you know, chaos theory and all of these things interlinking. So I'm willing to go with the coincidences as they were and say, no, actually what the novel is doing is pointing you out the patterns that happen. So that's fine.
And that's what comes out also in Adnan's story about money and the whole financial system.
Yeah, and the thing he's doing with the gas and the day trading, which is awesome.
Which I only understood 50% of because a lot of that went over my head. But anyway, yeah, keep going.
But at the end, like everything is – nice and okay and everyone gets a happy ending and it just felt too neat.
Yeah.
Like everyone gets what they want. Like even, okay, Jan dies.
Yeah.
Like because there's a gunshot and he hears it and his heart goes and he dies. But, you know, they take him to hospital and it's actually good because he's going to get a better thing and he won't be deaf anymore.
That annoyed me too. His parents had no idea.
Yeah. But the thing is he died and I actually thought he was going to be dead.
Yeah.
And I thought that's the sacrifice that's been made. But no, it's not just that he gets to come back to life. He's actually going to have a better implant that means he won't have to wear the mufflers anymore and he won't, you know, he'll be able to hear. He'll be able to interact more and have a normal life. So that's a good thing. And Georgios finds out that...
Now, what do you think of his parents not checking up to see if there was new technology for their son?
I put that down to his doctors actually more than his parents. Right. I mean, okay. I don't think that's not a parental issue. If you're going to see doctors and your doctors are saying, here's what the treatments are. You know, that's quite a common story. You know, people in less privileged areas won't have all the medical options.
Okay,
and they come across something one day. It's like, oh, how the hell did we not know about this? Anyway, so, you know, everyone's story is nice. Like Adnan gets away, like more than gets away with his scam. He actually gets immunity. Like everyone is fine. There's been no real test of anyone. There's been no sacrifice made to get to this good ending.
No, I don't know if I agree. No. What about not the other female character who's – I'm not even going to bother pronouncing her name. The market –
Layla.
Layla, yeah. That's a real complex name, Layla.
Yeah.
I'm struggling with it. Can't get the words through my teeth. Layla, she goes through shit.
Oh, no, she does. But you know, there's nothing like – at the end again, she's now got this position in this company. She's going to have a little romance with
Also,
yeah. It's all, and I don't like a story doesn't. You know, Connie Willis's story ended really nice, but there has to be something. There's got to be a resonance, a poignancy. There's got to be something, and I just like this. The whole book.
Asa loses the mellified man. In fact, we never hear of it again.
But then she's okay because they're going to go to Europe and they're millionaires. And
well, she's not because she loses her business.
No, but she gets to go to Europe, which is what she's wanted. She wanted to go back to Europe. She's going. They're going. It, like, yeah. Everyone is, you know, there's no real, even Giorgio, like, he's found it actually reconciles with this woman and he realized that this burden he's been carrying for 40 years was not a burden and it's all so you know, wrapped up nicely. And there's no ongoing.
Yeah, fair.
There's not even an ongoing idea for really for any of these characters that they're actually going to have to really struggle about anything anymore. I mean, it's just all, yeah. And I just I thought for a book that's about religious terrorism and about the war for people's psychology and humanity and the problems that technology has and the dehumanizing effect that cities have and all of this, I think I just expected a bit more of an oomph in the ending, something which would leave me, you know, just a bit – something to pick out of my teeth. There's nothing to pick out of my teeth. It was all just, oh, that's nice for everyone.
Now cool. I know what Kat means about how we can ruin a book. Stop ruining the Dervish House.
No, I mean, I think
no, it's you're good. Right. You've got I a good. Just, no, you've got a good point.
It is a good book.
There
it
is a pappiness,
it would be my.
But that's because the novel ends in such a rush that everything just gets tied up, and
yeah.
The structure of the book
but,
doesn't
know,
help either.
I guess. I mean, the only character I guess is sort of Layla because she's a bit miffed that she's been inched out of marketing, but you know, she's still
the prophet guy, the sheikh.
Yeah. He's happy.
Well,
he's not happy, but he's like he's now taken this and he's going to.
No, he's owning his problem.
But that doesn't. He's accepting his role.
No, but he's one person. We don't know how he'll end up because he'll go home.
But this is about these people. This is the story about these people.
Yeah, but he has to face his father.
Yeah,
and his sister, who he burnt nearly to death.
But that's what he's doing.
Yeah,
that's
I know he's doing that. But that could all go to shit.
Of course. But the thing is, he's owning himself. He's also actually going to be a leader in. The Neo Dervish group that his brother.
That's his brother.
His brother has. I mean, you know, it's everything is, you know.
Yeah.
It's just a bit too. I don't know. When you
neat.
Well, when you make a Turkish carpet, you leave a flaw. You know, you there's. Yeah,
no, it's a fair
I liked
point.
It. I liked the book. I thought it was really accomplished. I thought it was incredibly ambitious. I thought for the most part it kind of got there. But yeah, there were problems. It's probably the book I'd be most happy to see win, but it's funny because I think with these Hugo Awards, I don't have a horse in the race. I don't care. Like, there are a couple of good books on the list. If they win, that's cool. I mean,
yeah,
it's like.
I was listening to the last Cood Street with Jonathan and Gary. This is
I know Jonathan loves the Dervish House.
Yeah,
he?
So does Gary.
Yeah. Jonathan says one that's like his book of the year.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, he loves it. And I said Alex loves it from Galactic Suburbia.
Yeah.
But they were just talking – I mean, they were talking about it just in their last podcast again, just about in terms of as a science fiction novel and foretelling the future – not foretelling the future, but the way that science fiction isn't just about dystopias and utopias, that this sort of book is where, well, things have gone a bit to shit.
Yeah.
But it's not all fucking doom and gloom and everyone's
no, –
and in a sense, your ending fits their idea because even though – Turkey's not Istanbul's not, you know, the greatest place in the world and these people are suffering in some ways, that there can be a happy ending in the context of this sort of society that exists
but
in 2027.
For everyone?
Well, for the six characters.
For everyone.
For the six characters.
That's everyone.
Yes. Yes. Look, the one thing we need, I mean, this is a white UK man writing about. Now, I don't know if you went to Turkey, did research, but he's not Turkish.
And this is set in – it's pretty near Turkey. It's about 2027, something like that.
Yeah, well, it's only it's near future.
Yeah, it's very near future. But we're not talking –
What the hell is a SEPTEP? I know it's a mobile phone. What does that stand for?
I don't know. It's just an idiom.
Okay.
That's fine.
Anyway,
I can deal with that. It's like a cross between a mobile phone and a smartphone.
The thing that I was expecting was that he was going to insult or offend me in some way. Because I'm expecting that now all the time from people who write about other cultures that aren't their own. And I thought his I don't think he talked down or patronized
No, he definitely didn't.
I think he really brings out Turkey beautifully.
Have you been to Turkey?
No. But
how do you know?
Well, it resonates with my experiences with Israel and Middle Eastern culture,
okay.
Even though it's technically not Middle Eastern. There's similarities, okay? And I think the other thing that – even though I don't think the mollified man stuff needs to be in there, that religious stuff that comes out of it, but also this idea that Istanbul is is the, because it's so close to Iraq and that is like the cradle of civilization, and this idea of the layering of different civilizations. And now there's a new one, which is a technologically based one, and how that ties into, that's where it ties into the mummified man story. I just don't think it does it well enough, but it's beautiful. Oh, and the, all that stuff about the Sephardic writers when they were doing, when they do the Torah writing, and the Hebrew alphabet being all intertwined, it that's gorgeous stuff.
Yeah, no, look, I there's
and he used Masorah, right? You wouldn't have, there's a word Masorah in there,
okay,
which means that he's used that correctly.
He's used that correctly.
Term, yes. That's my, because there's not much Jewish stuff in there, but the Jewish stuff's pretty spot on.
I mean, there's a lot to like about the Dervish House,
except it's meh, according to you.
Well, it's just, I mean, there's a lot to like about it. I didn't find anything to love.
Jean is lovely. He's got bit bots. You love the bit bots.
I love the bit bots. Yeah, but you know, like it's a good book.
The Boy Detective.
And I'm definitely I want to go back and read Brazil and River of Gods.
I think you'll enjoy Brazil, but find it frustrating as well.
Yeah, but
not necessarily from the happy.
But you know, I think it is a good book. I guess I expected more from the book, not only from the talk around the book, but from the book itself. I mean, the lead up in the book, the intricacies of it. I just expected more from an ending than this. Yeah, this sort of mad rush, and everything gets tied up neatly, and everyone gets off, and everyone.
I cheered. I'm sorry, it got me in. I was loving these characters. I didn't think much of them the first 100 pages,
stuff in
but
them.
By the halfway mark, I was into them, and by the end, I was cheering for them. And yes, I know I would have been shattered if any of them have had a fucked life. I'm sorry. I know. You know, it's, we're not meant to say stuff, but it's true.
They didn't have to be like. They didn't have to be all screwed over.
No, it's I know. It's just I didn't give a shit about anyone in 100,000 kingdoms here, and they're not necessarily all nice people. I mean, Adnan is swindling.
I don't like
No, but he's a real cock, but he's a really suave cock, and I loved him.
I didn't like
And I loved him as how he counterpoints with the other characters. And I love this idea that he brings down an entire organization in 5 days, although when you think about it, he all he had to do was pull the trigger. The gun was already there.
It was already done.
But the point is that I loved him because he's a suave, arrogant cock. But done, and not necessarily one with a heart of gold, but he's just McDonald nails it. Anyway, we should move on.
No, but I did. I like the book.
It's my Hugo.
I'd be very happy if it won.
It's my horse in the race.
Okay.
I voted it first.
I don't have a horse.
I voted it first.
If it wins, I'm happy. So you voted it first and then no award.
No. I voted it first.
Yeah.
Then
you don't
feed,
have to reveal your vote.
Then feed.
Okay.
Then the Jemison because, well, yeah, no, I still think it's better than no award. Then no award. Then all black or... All black, then all blackout, all clear, then cry. But
oh my god,
does this make you bad?
This makes you very bad. You are going to be on that Twitter feed, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I'm just going to read it and think nice things about Connie Willis when she wins. I'm not going to be on the Twitter. What do you want me to say? Do you want me to get on and go, Connie, why did you win? You know nothing about the UK. And how dare you write about 1940s UK?
No, it's just
And is this the best we could do in the science fiction community?
No, I just heard what you said about Blackout All Clear, and I heard what you said about 100,000 Kingdoms just then, and I just don't know that you're throwing a award between them is entirely fair.
Can I say something honestly? This is, and I really shouldn't say this on radio, but I hadn't read 100,000 Kingdoms.
Oh, you've done it again.
I didn't put a first this time, or second, I put a third.
You need to stop voting for things you haven't read.
I know, it's bad. I know everyone told me it's wrong, and I should just kept it off the ballot.
You have made a mockery of the process.
I know, but don't hurt me, because I know I'm not meant to fill in. I'm a complete. The box is there. It's screaming to have a number in it. No. I needed to put a number in.
You are dead to me. We're moving on.
Oh.
So.
There needed to be a
one thing. Shut up, Ian. Okay. One thing we had to mention is that earlier this month we stayed up very late and for far too long on Skype.
3 hours.
But don't worry, she's editing it down. The lovely Julia Rios, who runs or who does the Outer Alliance podcast, which you can find, we'll write a link in the show notes, but if you go to the Outer Alliance blog, there's a link in the right-hand menu. And she interviewed us for the podcast She has cut it well down below well, we don't 3 hours, I assume. No, well, we don't know. She said she was going to cut it out.
She said?
Especially the bit about what you said about the donkey.
I did. Anyway. Can I say the worst thing, and it may not come out on the podcast, and if it doesn't, I'll mention it next time. The worst thing that was said in that podcast, and there were some vile things said, was not said by me. All right? I just want to make that very clear.
Yeah, anyway. And what Julia did was she took our format and made it her own. And we talked about Horn and Bleed by Peter Ball, which Ian recommended that we all read.
Well, actually, I thought I'd only recommended Horn. Bleed.
Okay. But anyway. And the short story Night Shit by Kim Westwood, which is from Dreaming Again, which yes. I recommended. And Julia recommended for the both of us an amazing story by Hal Duncan called The Behold of the Eye, which I just adore and I need to track down
we
more.
We gushed about more Hal Duncan. We actually gushed about all three stories. Oh, it's yeah. It's a pretty well, positive podcast. All,
yeah, exactly.
But it gets so vile at one point.
It does.
Not but because
it
of
might that. Get cut out.
No, it shouldn't. I mean, I think it should go 3 hours because there's a lot of gold.
I think she brilliant. Will cut it down quite a bit.
I was great.
You, yeah, okay. Anyway,
what
so.
About you didn't shut up. Can I just say, I'm talking, people have a go at me. You did not shut up in that podcast. There was a half an hour there where I went and had a crap. I put the Skype on. I just went out of shit. And, you know, it was 1 o'clock in the morning. I was busting to go for a crap.
Oh
I went for
my
a
crap. God.
And come back and you're still talking about the same old crap. Julia probably went and had, I don't know, went out for lunch. You're still going on. I swear. People think I'm exaggerating it, but it's true.
It's so mean to me.
A little bit. Believe, but it's true.
I can't believe someone who doesn't even know how to vote in the Hugos is.
There's a box. It cries for a number.
Anyway, Cheryl
Moore will be so angry with me.
So, lovely listeners, if you'd like to hear more of us, or if you'd just like to listen to a great podcast and rack it up on your iPhone or whatever you listen to these things on. I definitely recommend the Outer Alliance podcast. It's a lot of fun.
It is. It was actually,
I've listened to quite
Julia
a few
Julia was
episodes.
A great interviewer. She asked some really good questions and yeah, we could have actually just done an interview yeah. except for all the stories. That was great.
So that will be up, she said, towards the end of August.
Yes.
We'll provide a link in the show notes anyway to the podcast blog.
Yes, we will.
But definitely download some old episodes. She has really, really good interviews with lots of great
sure,
writers. She had a fantastic interview with Elizabeth Baer a couple of episodes ago. I was really
yes.
Did you listen to that? That was
no.
awesome. No. You're just nodding.
I am,
yes, you are.
Because you wanted to embarrass me.
Anyway, so definitely recommend the Outer Alliance podcast. And,
it's on
and
my
yes,
feed.
And our episode will be up by the end of the month, I think.
Yes.
This is the point where you get to beg for iTunes ratings, Ian.
Well, I'd like us all, and I mean all you listeners, to send feedback. We'd like you to comment at the website at writerandcritic.podbean.com. You can email us at writerandcritic@gmail.com. Do I have to spell out writer and critic? I don't think so. And you can rate us 5 stars, don't bother with anything less, on iTunes. I think this episode, especially how I've admitted a few things that I probably shouldn't have, deserves 5 stars. Cheryl, please don't be angry with me.
Yeah.
Next month on this podcast, actually next month is September, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, because October's the one where we might have to do some stuff.
Yeah.
Because, anyway. Yeah. Okay.
September.
Yes, what are we doing?
Well, I've recommended We Have Always Lived in the Castle by Shirley Jackson.
That was out of the blue. I wasn't expecting that. You've pulled that right out of
yeah,
your clacker.
Yeah. I was going to recommend something else, but then I reread that thing and decided no. So, yes, We Have Always Lived in the Castle by Shirley Jackson.
And I'm recommending Who Fears Death by Nnedi Okorafor.
Yeah, which I'm looking forward to reading. It's sitting right there.
Yeah, I can see it. It's lovely.
So that's next month. And
yes.
I think that probably wraps us up for this episode.
Yeah, I think it does.
I think we may have come in under the hour and a half.
That's a record.
So,
do you want to go back and talk more about Connie Willis?
No, I think we're fine.
Just to pat
we
it
could
out.
Talk to you a bit more about how you vote in the Hugos.
Seriously.
So in the other category,
I've
did
done
you tick all the boxes in all the other
I
want
to talk about this anymore. All right?
Did you read everything in the Hugo voting packet?
I just see a name and if I see a name like Kidge Johnson, it looks cool. I thought, well, give that a one.
Oh, my God.
I did not do that.
You totally did that.
I did not do that. Do not do that. I didn't. Kirsten, stop the podcast now.
Okay, we're going to go away now.
Bye.
See you next month.
See you next month.
Bye.